No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to The Show For You, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. Welcome to the newest edition of the Rise Up, See Red podcast, show number 156. And this show ends up being a little bit more than we planned for because we've got some, this is draft week. And so we've got our mock draft and we got some other news to talk about. But first, I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire, Arizona Cardinals site. On the line as well as my co-host, Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and also the host of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, how's it going here on crazy, crazy draft week when all the information is coming all at once?
It was going okay, and then it just got thrown into chaos with the Arizona Cardinals news today.
Yes, and that's what kind of what we're going to talk about a little bit to start with. Darryl Washington. You remember him? Yeah, forever ago. Suspended since May of 2014, was granted a conditional reinstatement from the NFL on Tuesday. And that means he can start working out with the team, attend team meetings, and there are a number of things that he's got to do and say and work out. But he's on track to be able to be in the NFL this year. And it was Washington. Another one that happened was in Pittsburgh with Martavis Bryant. It was reinstated. But the Cardinals, who have been without Washington since 2014, the persona non grata who everyone just keeps asking about but hasn't been around and the team wouldn't talk about. So he is back on the Cardinals roster. So that's we're going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk about after that. It's all draft. So we previewed both sides of the ball. We previewed the quarterbacks 3 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, we previewed the rest of the offense. And last week, we had a long, long show about the defensive side of the ball. But we're done with the previews. And tonight is our annual mock draft. Seth and I will both talk about our picks for the first round and, you know, who would be good picks, who we think is going to be the pick, and other possibilities as we lead up to the draft, which will happen this Thursday. Seth, you just had your most recent show. You recorded it, was it on Monday, your latest draft breakdown show? How did that go?
It went well. We just did rumors and talking about rumors that we've heard and that have come out lately. And, it was fun. It's always fun to discuss rumors with Jeff Risden and kind of get the idea of what's being said out there, because we know 99% of it's fake, but there is always 1% that you can kind of grasp onto and enjoy with a dose of reality. And so we focused on the rumors. From the quarterbacks to the trades to guys that we've heard have been promised first round draft selections by various teams. We didn't name any teams. We didn't name prospect names, but so it was an interesting discussion. A name you wrote about today on Cards Wire, Marcus May. I've been told that he has a first round promise from a team at the end of round one. So, that Cardinals draft target may not be exactly what we're hoping for at 45.
And so we'll go ahead and get started with Darryl Washington. And that's what we'll lead the show with here up on Rise Up Sea Red. We'll talk Darryl Washington. So he's back. What in the world does this mean? First of all, is he any good? Do the Cardinals want him back? What's the money situation? And do the players want him back? So let's kind of go through some of this. The last time we saw Darryl Washington, he was damn good. He was special in terms of he had the potential to be special at the position. And, you know, then he was a knucklehead. I mean, the last time we saw him was 2013, and he was suspended for the first four games, and there was a whole arrest thing, and then he got suspended again. But he's 30 years old now, going on 31, starting here in October. Can we expect him to be anything like the player he was?
No. I mean, I really don't think you can. Even if he comes back, he's not going to be in football shape for probably a season. I mean, fortunately, as we found out from Kent Summers, they have him under contract for four seasons. So, I mean, there's that. But I just don't – I don't see a player that can have any type of impact in 2017 when, you know, it's been over 1,000 days since he's even had contact, allegedly, with the organization. So I think overall you just kind of look at it and you say, look, he's a player that we know has upside. Whether or not that's attainable still is one thing. The team has to decide whether or not they want to, you know, pay money to him and invest more in him than they already have and trust him again, quite frankly. I think a lot of it's going to go depending on what the guys in the locker room want. You know, if enough guys make a point to go and say something to Mike Bidwill and Steve Keim, then maybe they would consider keeping him. But I just don't see Darryl Washington being on the 2017 roster.
And that's the thing for me. I, based on conversations I've had with some other people who have talked to Steve Keim about the situation, Keim took this, especially this final suspension, very personally. He was angry because he felt lied to and betrayed by Washington. I don't know how you move on from that, how you can count on that unless, and then, I mean, this is one of those things, and Kent mentioned this, one of the beat writers tweeted this, that, you know, the Cardinals already came out and said, okay, the NFL let us know that he's been conditionally reinstated. As for his future, it's way too early to say whether or not he'll return to the team. So that the draft's coming up. So basically, they just tabled it. They're like, oh, Darryl's back? Yeah, we'll deal with that later. And it made it seem very unlikely he'd be back. Now, that being said, they'll want to have a sit down with him. Has he changed at all? Is he a different person? And this is where Michael Bidwill, who likes to sit in on those draft interviews, and he uses that training that he's got as a former attorney, federal prosecutor, to be able to cut through the BS and be able to say who's, you know, who's got what, who's lying, who's, you know, legitimately telling what they believe to be the truth. Bidwill's going to have to be on point with that this time around. And then it's going to come down to, because leading to the next part, dealing with the money, is there's no way they're going to, I can't see a single scenario in which he comes back under the same contract, even though technically he, you know, basically just comes back with the same, you know, what he was going to get in 2014. That's how things are going to go. I do not see a single scenario in which that is absolutely possible at all.
I'm with you. I just don't think it's anything that's going to happen. It's a shame. It's a wasted career. But at this point, it is what it is, right? Like, there's nothing that can happen. There's nothing that we can do about it. If he's back on the roster, it will be, you know, it'll be with a very short leash, short rope, and a quick trigger from the front office. But I mean, personally, I think they're just trying to move forward. And I don't know if that's with a guy like Washington in tow.
Here is now. Here's the other question: is that Jay Feely was on the radio today on one of the local radio shows here in Phoenix, and gave from his perspective, because he was once teammates with Washington and could offer a special perspective, because at the time he was also the NFLPA rep for the team and a close friend and a personal friend of Washington's. So Feely said he knew some of the troubles he was going through. He knew in intimate details about Daryl's situation, what did he be going through, and how his teammates had talked to him many times about making good decisions. And he said, though, that Washington was very well liked in the locker room. The teammates loved him. He gave his all on the field. His issues were all outside of the locker room. It wasn't an issue. He was a bad guy in the locker room. Everyone got along with him. And he also made it a point that there will be guys now who will want to see what he has to offer. And we already have. Larry Fitzgerald was very quick to tweet public support for Daryl Washington, stating how pleased and happy he was for Washington to be reinstated. And I completely understand that, because Larry Fitzgerald is a player's player. He wants to see players get paid. He wants players to make teams, and he wants players to get opportunities to redeem themselves. He was very upset when Michael Floyd was released by the Cardinals. And he probably wasn't privy to all the information, the fact that, you know, Michael Bidwell came out and said he showed no remorse. He didn't want to take care of things. And so we just cut ties with him. Larry was not happy at that, because Michael Floyd is a close friend of his, and he felt that the team turned their back. The team turned its back on him. I would suppose very strongly with the tweet that he wants Daryl Washington back on the football team, and at least to see what he has to offer.
Yeah, and I mean, that makes sense, but he's not the one cutting the paychecks, and the Cardinals have already been swindled out of, what, $10
million? $10
million. Which makes it really hard. I mean, there is a part of you that says, you know, I'd really like to get that money back and you know, get him, like you said, at a very low cost for the next couple seasons and kind of recoup that money in terms of services rendered at a very low cost. But I just can't see it. Like, the bridge feels like it's been burned. Maybe I'm reading into it incorrectly, but that's just me.
I would say so too, in terms of the front office. However, I could see a scenario in which he sticks around. One, the position isn't exactly ideal. Well, I mean, they're fine at starting. They got Dansby. They got Dion Buchanan. There was one. Washington was a special talent. But behind those two, behind Dansby and Buchanan, you really don't have anything. I could see a scenario in which they accept him back if he will redo his contract, basically a one-year deal, basically league minimum, and he's going to have to fight for the roster. And I think if anything other than that scenario, he'll have to fight for roster, fight for playing time. So we probably won't play much in 2017, because it's going to be hard to get Dansby off the field. And, you know, I said it a year, you know, two seasons ago, Dion Buchanan, maybe he's not quite as natural at the position as Washington was, but he was more productive than Washington was that final season, and he had a fantastic season. In 2015, Dion Buchanan's had one of the best linebacker seasons we've ever seen in terms of production. But, you know, and then allow him to, one, get kind of in a football shape and see what he has to offer, and if it works out, then you can work to re-sign them. If not, then you just cut ties. And we already know, you said the numbers from over the cap from one of your guys, your cap specialist on your side, is what he's going to count a little less than $1.9 million against the cap no matter what.
Right. So, I mean, if you basically say Vetman is probably right around $800,000-$900,000 for a guy with his tenure. Although I don't know how tenure counts while you're suspended.
It doesn't. You're not accruing years.
So he's probably
he was already
he might be at like the 750 mark, because I know it goes up at like 6 years or something like that. So, so he might be at like the 6 to 750 mark. So I don't know how that works. Like, they can't say, well, we're already paying you 1.875, so we're not going to pay you anything more, because that's deferred money that they have no control over, right? So they would basically...
Well, in terms of the cap, isn't it money that's already paid that just counts against the cap?
Right,
I think that's how it's...
Well, what I mean. It's deferred money in terms of their cap space. So, you know, the 1.9 million counts against their 16 million or whatever they had in cap space. So just call it 2 to make it easy. They're at 14 now. Now, do they have to pay him, you know, we'll just call it a flat million to keep him, or not keep him, but do they have to give him another million, or can they say, you know, that's what I don't get about the whole cap thing. I'm assuming they would have to fork over the extra like 600,000, 700,000. And, you know, in the scheme of everything, that's not much. But again, it's a precedent, and it's everything else you've done. I don't know. Like, it's going to be a really hard sell after you cut Floyd on a dime to then turn around and renegotiate with Darryl Washington. Like, that's going to be a really awkward press conference.
But, you know, like the team said in their statement, they're just not going to deal with it yet. And they probably, while he's allowed to come to the facility, I'm sure they're going to tell him, no, don't yet. That's my guess. That's my guess. Because they have the phase one is underway. The you know, the offseason program has started. I believe phase two starts next week or something like that. I'm sure he will be told, you know, you're reinstated, but you're still not quite welcomed yet here yet. We're going to work this out before we let you back in the building. And that's how it should be. It could, you know, you think, because he was very instinctive when he wasn't a heady player. He wasn't a real, you know, one of those cerebral players like Dick Carlos Dansby. He reads coverages now. Washington was a reactive guy. He wasn't big in the, he wasn't big on recognizing. He just uses athleticism and his speed to get, to get behind the line of scrimmage before anyone could react. And so it'll be interesting to see if he can do that at all. Yeah. So maybe not, but I do see a scenario in which he could be back, but you feel a little bit like it's a really kind of crude now. It's a spurned lover, and you're like, okay, yeah, but maybe it's the right thing to do because he's changed, but there's just a bad taste in the mouth, and it won't go away for a while.
Yeah, and I think that's really it. I mean, there's nothing really that at this point that we can say or do other than speculate what the hell's going to happen. And I mean, I just honestly have no idea. They're at such a crossroads with the team. They have to figure out, you know, where they're going to go from here. And I just don't know if carrying a 30-year-old, 31-year-old on 3 years rest is what they, you know, how they want to invest, not just cap space, but roster currency.
Yeah. So that's enough about that. Since the Cardinals aren't going to deal with it, let's not deal with it so much anymore. And so let's move on. So coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red, we're going to talk mock draft. We're going to do our mock draft that we've done for, I think, the last 3 years. Each of us will make picks for each of the teams in the first round. I know myself, I have a couple of trades that I have that I am predicting there in the top of the draft. So we'll break it down, probably do the first 10 picks, go to the next 10 picks, and then round out the final 12 before we call it a show. So that's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. Our last mock draft was under a different name. So this is the first Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the Rise Up Sea Red mock draft, but it's our third or fourth. I think it's our third with under the podcast on the whole. So that's coming up next. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red, and we're going to bring you our mock draft. We're going to talk about the first 10 picks. First of all, Seth, any trades? Do you have any trades happening in the first 10?
Nope, no trades in the first 10 picks.
Okay, I've got two. So we'll go with that. So do you have any surprises at number one? So number one, you got the Cleveland Browns. They've been rumored all along. Miles Garrett, although there is some chatter about perhaps a quarterback. Do you have him going? Do you just have him going straight with Garrett or anybody else?
Yeah, just Miles Garrett. Kind of boring, but I think that's what happens.
And I agree. I know that the front office, you know, what the reports are is that the front office wants a quarterback. However, they brought in their front office people to do the job. Let's let them do their job. Miles Garrett should be the pick. He is good and athletic and should be very impactful. And on the other hand, it doesn't look like any of the quarterbacks that they could draft at number one is of the same ilk as a Andrew Luck, Peyton Manning, any of those guys that you take at the top of the draft and think that they will be great. The guys that we have coming in have the potential to maybe be great. But when you take a guy number one, isn't that what you want? You're supposed to be a sure thing.
Right. And, you know, this draft is really weird because I don't know if there's a sure thing at all. But Garrett's the closest to a sure thing with his combination of productivity and athleticism. So you have to like him at one and letting, you know, the Browns kind of build around him.
And so let's go for pick number two, the San Francisco 49ers. This is where I have the first kind of surprise, the first little monkey wrench. Almost all the mock drafts, almost all of them for a long time have said Stanford's Solomon Thomas is going to be the pick. I can see that to be a pick. However, I'm going with, John Lynch, former safety, and probably maybe the safest pick and probably a great, great guy to add to the locker room. I'm going to have them take in LSU's Jamal Adams at number two. And he can kind of be that leader and cornerstone, kind of the rock of that San Francisco defense. Even though they don't necessarily need a safety, they can, but that will add an element to their defense. And I don't think it'd be a bad pick either.
No, I think it'd be a fine pick. It helps out a young team. They're not going to put any investment into a quarterback this year, it sounds like. but overall, I think, you have a team that has so many needs and they're in a transition period that it makes sense to go with a guy that you have, the trust of a low ceiling, quote unquote, and a guy that is billed for his leadership probably more than his actual on-field play. So I think it all makes sense. I see where you're coming from there.
What pick do you go with for you?
So for me, I think when it's all said and done, they're going to take Chalk and go with Solomon Thomas. I think they want out of that pick really badly, but I think overall they're going to end up staying there and taking the guy that can really help transform them as they switch to that 4-3 defense and gives them that edge rusher that they'll need, because Eric Armstead and DeForest Buckner are much better in terms of a 34 front. So you're going to probably have to move one of those guys, Arizona, Eric Armstead, So that type of move and transition unfortunately mitigates old drafts and renders them useless. So that's where they're at with there.
Although I can't, as solid as Thomas is, a very, very, very talented player, how exciting it would be to see the 49ers with the top 10 pick again, going with another defensive lineman from the Pac-12.
Right. And it's one of those unfortunate things. Like, you liked what they were doing with the Buckner-Armstead combination, but then they hire a coach that doesn't. And I get that you don't want to hire a coach that is just going to come in and say, yeah, I'll utilize the 3-4 defense so we can utilize our draft picks early. I mean, you let Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch build what they want to build, but it is unfortunate. And that's always the danger when you have these regime transitions, that you've now, like I said, that Eric Armstead pick from 2 years ago, now it was looking bad anyways, but now it's probably just going to be rendered completely useless, and that poor kid's going to be labeled a bust, even though it's probably not his fault.
Pick number three, you got the Chicago Bears. And where do you go with that pick for Chicago?
I think the Bears are in a really weird situation where they either want to get Solomon Thomas or move down to pick up anybody. So I think when you look at it, with Solomon Thomas gone, Jamal Adams off your board, it's going to be hard to find a guy that fits what they want. But for me, since he's still on my board, I really have a hard time believing this is going to happen, but I'm going to mock Jamal Adams to the Bears at 3. The name to watch there is Deshaun Watson. Living in Chicago now, I've heard ad nauseum how much they love him. Justin brought up a great point, though, last night, that it's really hard to sell Watson there with the youth of the GM, but the veteranness of the head coach and an old coach that's probably not going to want to saddle up with a rookie quarterback.
Well, and here's the thing with the Bears as well. Didn't they just pay Mike Glennon a whole lot of money?
Yeah, but I mean, it's basically a one-year $15 million deal. And so, and let's be honest, I don't know how much they're setting him up to actually be successful.
Yeah, that was – I for my pick, I thought about maybe I gave O.J. Howard a really good look right there. Just because since they went out and got Mike Glennon, and I thought, you know, let's give him a guy who he can throw the ball to. But with my giving Jamal Adams to the 49ers, that leaves Solomon Thomas open, which means I that's probably the guy, like you were saying, that they want. Solomon Thomas is the pick for me for the Bears at number 3.
And that makes sense. And I think from, you know, one of the things I always talk about is we usually know what teams are looking for at this point. The team that we have under this regime have not had any idea about consistently is Jacksonville. And they are consistently mocked Leonard Fournette and Jonathan Allen. And then that just makes me like run away from those picks. Not because I don't think that they're plausible, but I mean, this is an organization that took Blake Bortles at 3 when nobody had any idea they were in on Bortles. They took Dante Fowler Jr. at 3, I think. You know, those picks haven't worked out. Jalen Ramsey, they took at 5. Everybody assumed they were going to be taking Joey Bosa, but I mean, those picks might have flipped between Bosa and Ramsey, but they, you know, they seem to always pull out a name that nobody really linked to them. So who do you have them taking it for?
This is actually where the first trade comes in. The Jaguars, who I know they like based on people I follow around, they do really like Leonard Fournette, and they're in on Leonard Fournette, but they're not only in on Leonard Fournette, they're also in on Joe Mixon. And so I think this, so what I'm going to say here is the Carolina Panthers, who also really love Leonard Fournette and really could use a running back, that they are going to, the Panthers are going to trade up to number 4 to get Leonard Fournette, and the Jags will move back to the 8th spot and pick up an extra pick behind, you know, pick up an extra pick on day 2. And then, of course, they will probably, I think they will target, assuming he makes it out of the first round, the little target Joe Mixon in at the top of the second round.
And so at that position, I think because it's not talked about, it's not anything that we've seen or discussed. I think the Jags are going to go with O.J. Howard here. And I just think that with their unwillingness to ever kind of drop who they're going to take, that it makes sense there. And that's what they're going to do. So that's just my opinion, but that's what I see happening.
And it makes sense because they doubled up on defense last year with Jalen Ramsey and Miles Jack. This year they can, especially since they're not sold on Blake Bortles. They don't really believe in him yet, but by doing this, it would also give them the opportunity to give him enough weapons to say, okay, now we're giving you everything, especially if they target like a Joe Mixon in the top of the second round, they get O.J. Howard in the first round. They're saying, here's some weapons. You better be good.
Right, and it gives their quarterback one more shot, and it saves them an embarrassment if missing on another high pick.
Number five, Tennessee Titans. I have Jonathan Allen. That's where his that fall that it's potentially, because you've heard that Jonathan Allen potentially could fall, not for anything that he is, but simply because the quarterbacks and the other players that are there. I have Tennessee taking Jonathan Allen.
And I have the Titans, with the way the board fell, going with Marshawn Lattimore there. I think that they would be very happy with the ability to pick Lattimore. Name to watch out for here are Mike Williams and John Ross. Two different type wide receivers, but both kind of downfield threats that win with, that can give Marcus Mariota different types of targets with the ability to attack downfield.
Hey, number six, this is where my next trade comes in. And this is where the Browns trade up because they want to get their quarterback. So the Browns trade up to number six. The Jets originally had that pick, so they will move down to number 12 and get at a pick later on. And here I have the Browns taking their hometown stud in Mitchell Trubisky.
And I just have the Jets taking Mitch Trubisky. So,
same spot, different teams.
Right. So I just think that's going to be the spot where he goes. I think that you see Trubisky in a Jets uniform at this point because it, even with the regime change that's about to happen with Bulls on a sinking ship, you still assume that they're going to end up with taking a quarterback that they like, even though they're going to probably draft high again next year and kind of get the organization in a better spot with a young quarterback than it is right now, which is literally a dumpster fire.
And Trubisky, I think for me, the Browns, I they've been – Trubisky is reportedly even in play for number one. You've got an Ohio kid. He's got some upside. Now, the question is, what does he become? Is he Blake Bortles-like? Is he Blaine Gabbert-like? Is he Alex Smith-like? And you have to hope that he's more on the early Blake Bortles, Alex Smith, and less of the Blaine Gabbert.
And – I think he could have the same type of career arc that Jake Locker had before the sudden retirement where, Locker, his last season before he retired, was starting to put it together and they were showing those flashes. The Chargers are an interesting position, and I have a buddy that's pretty dialed in, Kyle Posey, and he's convinced himself that they're going to shock everybody with their pick. So I'm going to go way off beat here, but I'll let you go first.
Okay. I've got them taking Malik Hooker at number 7, safety out of Ohio State, giving them that back end help that they had with Eric Weddle. They missed that. They didn't treat him well on his way out, but now they're going to be able to make up for that by adding Hooker.
And I have them taking Garrett Bowles, the left tackle out of Utah. And my rationale is simply listening to Kyle, and he thinks that they're either going to reach for Bowles or Mike Williams because of the overreaction of what's gone on at both the tackle positions and the wide receiver position for the Chargers over the last couple years. And so I think they're gonna shock everybody by taking Bowles or Williams at 7 7.
That would be the surprise of the early part of the draft if Bowles, because the talk this year is how the tackle class is just not good. I mean, there's a couple of good ones. Bowles is, you know, between Bowles and Ramczyk, kind of the top of the class, but nowhere. I mean, there's no top 10 tackle this year, so that would be a big surprise.
Yeah, so that's, I'm going off script a little bit, but not that you and I did this beforehand, but yeah, this is a little out of left field, but I mean, some teams got to do it, right?
Right. And it's for those of you listening, this is kind of the one show we really don't talk things through. So our mock drafts, Seth knew a couple of things about mine, but this is the one thing we don't know ahead of time who the other guy's picking. So it's interesting because we have a couple things that we're kind of going on the same thing. Like we both have Trubisky at number 6, but with different teams. And so leading up to number 8, this is where I had the trade. So this is actually going to be the Jags pick because they traded down. The Panthers moved up to number 4 to get Leonard Fournette. In Seth's scenario at number 4, the Jaguars picked up O.J. Howard. In my scenario at number 8, as they trade down, they get O.J. Howard. And then the rationale I have is, like I said before, when Seth got Howard, and that's this. They doubled up on defense. I think this time they're going to try and target the offensive side of the ball to give Blake Bortles the chance to prove himself and kind of prove to the team that he is their future quarterback. So you give him an O.J. Howard who is going to be great at tight end. And then at the top of the second round, add the running back in Joe Mixon, who not only has the talent as a running back, but also can do things in the passing game.
And I still have the Panthers picking there, and I think they take Christian McCaffrey over Fournette, giving them a more diverse and dynamic player. McCaffrey was my running back 2, Fournette's my running back 1. But in this scenario, I understand why the Panthers would do that.
And he would fit really well with Cam Newton. I would think that the spread concepts that they use would be a perfect match.
And, you know, I tweeted this the other day. I'm really glad we have David Johnson because the running backs that are coming out, not just guys that have come out, but, you know, you look at Zeke Elliott, Christian McCaffrey, Derrick Henry, Leonard Fournette, and then you look at next year, a kid named Saquon Barkley out of Penn State. It's a good time to reinvest in running. And I'm glad the Cardinals already have somebody because I think a lot of these players are going to get drafted or go like in round 2, where, you know, before the Cardinals would want to pick them in round 1. And so it's just fortunate that they have somebody already in house. The Bengals are the next wild card on this thing because it seems like everybody's kind of pinpointing one player there. I don't know who you're taking, but I have them going a slightly different direction on the defensive line, but taking the semi-falling Jonathan Allen at 9.
Not bad. And I have them going on the defense. They're looking for the pass rusher. I have them taking Derek Barnett out of Tennessee. There's, you know, Barnett's an interesting guy because he's been productive, but isn't there some concerns about some of his measurements? But ultimately, I don't think he's, you know, the type of pass rusher he is and the potential that he has wasn't going to drop out of the top 15. And the I think the Bengals are a good fit for him in terms of what they do.
Yeah, and I like that pick. I was deciding between the two of them. So, you know, the Bills are an interesting one because they're allegedly in on quarterbacks, but I don't know if they're that in on the quarterbacks. So where do you have them going?
I have them taking Mike Williams. So rather than Corey Davis, I think they really like the big catch radius, the versatility of the big number one receiver potential that Mike Williams has, and will, you know, whether or not big kind of quarterback, regardless of who they have at quarterback, he can be big and productive, whether they're using Tyrod Taylor or anyone else.
And I agree with you. That's where Mike Williams goes in my mind.
And so that'll wrap up our first 10 picks of our mock draft. So coming up on the next segment of Rise at Sea, we're going to talk about, we're going to go through picks 11 through 20. That's coming up next. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red. We've wrapped up the first 10 picks, and this is how it goes for me. I'll have Seth run down his 10 picks because I don't remember the top of my head. So for me, it goes Myles Garrett, number one. Jamal Adams, number two to San Francisco. Solomon Thomas, number three to the Chicago Bears. The Carolina Panthers trade up from number eight to number four, and they take Leonard Fournette. The Titans take Jonathan Allen, number five. The Cleveland Browns trade up to the sixth pick and take Mitchell Trubisky, number seven. The Chargers, Malik Hooker, number eight, where the Jags ended up. And that will get O.J. Howard, number nine, to the Bengals. That's Derek Barnett, the pass rusher. And number 10, the Bills, Mike Williams. What were your first 10?
And I had Myles Garrett, one, Solomon Thomas to the 49ers, Jamal Adams to the Bears, O.J. Howard to the Jaguars, Marshawn Lattimore to the Tennessee Titans, Mitch Trubisky to the Jets, Garrett Bowles, the shock of the first round, to the L.A. Chargers, Carolina Panthers taking Christian McCaffrey, Cincinnati Bengals taking Jonathan Allen, and the Buffalo Bills sticking with Mike Williams. And as we start off on 11, I'm going to break all Cardinals fans' hearts, and the Cardinals are going to miss out on the player that the apparently local sportscasters have been just building up to be the guy at 13, and at 11, the New Orleans Saints snipe him and take Hassan Reddick out of Temple.
Ooh, I thought about it there. In fact, I that's who I felt the Saints would do. However, I've got one guy that's top 10 pick, top 5 pick in a lot of draft, on a lot of mock drafts. He's still available, and that's Marshawn Lattimore, and they could definitely use some help on the back end of that defense. So, well, I think Hassan Reddick would probably be their number one target in terms of who they think they're going to get. Because Lattimore is available, he's the guy that lands in New Orleans. So Hassan Reddick is still on the board for the Cardinals.
And that would be an interesting scenario to come to fruition. I think I've said all along, I thought Lattimore's really the only guy with the tape to be drafted in the first round. I thought two other guys deserve to be pushed up based on a combination of film and athleticism that they possess. I think the incident involving Gary and Connolly, which seems similar in terms of he probably didn't commit a crime, but it's going to be really hard for the NFL to figure out in 48 hours if he didn't commit a crime. And that's going to make it really hard for teams to spend a high volume pick or high value pick on him. So that's why I think Lattimore again gets pushed up more than he normally would have. Because I think a guy like Conley would actually make sense at 11. We've talked about him at 13, 14, all, you know, down throughout the first round. He makes sense at all of those places, including, you know, like 18 to Tennessee with their second pick. But with that fall, Sidney Jones injury, there now becomes really just two names that make sense at cornerback in the first round. And I don't know if you're a team like Tennessee, I don't know if you want to wait on a Kevin King to fall or to get to 18 when you pick again. So they may be pressed into taking a Marshawn Lattimore. But I completely understand your take on the on everything here, because it does make sense the way your board fell. I think the only, you know, reach, quote unquote, is Adams at two, but I had him going at three because I literally have no idea what the Bears are going to do.
And so for number 12, this is where we have two different teams, because here the Browns had already traded up. So for me, this is the New York Jets. Who's your pick for the Jets?
So, well, for the Browns, for me,
I'm sorry, Browns. That's right. That's right. You're still Browns. Right. Mine's Jets.
for the Browns, I think they're going to take Deshaun Watson here. I think this is where Watson comes off the board. The semi-fall is over. They get a quarterback that is going to match what their head coach is like in terms of spirit, fire, you know, kind of that determination. And Hugh Jackson is really good at getting the most out of a player, whether it's a bad player like a Cody Kessler or a really good player. So I think with Deshaun Watson, that's like kind of the glass slipper. And I, you know, for my friends that are Browns fans and being a Cardinals fan for life, you kind of root for those teams because you don't want to see them continue to, or you would like to see them get to experience what the Cardinals have over the last couple of years in Arizona.
And interestingly enough, I had to smile. I smiled when you said who the pick was, because guess what? At number 12, I have Deshaun Watson, only that he's going to the Jets, which I think will be a good fit for the Jets there in terms of personality. He's not Mark Sanchez. In fact, the Mitchell Trubisky has one of their Rob Siminski, I think is his name, is the beat writer for one of the New York papers out there. And he's been banging the table saying Trubisky's just another Mark Sanchez, you know, a guy that looks great but only had the 1 year of starting. So they trade down here and they still pick up their quarterback with Watson, who has all the intangibles. And I think will fit very nicely in terms of temperament and everything else that will fit with Todd Bowles, and I think would probably fit with any coach that you have in there, because of he's got the quiet confidence, so he's got the big game experience, but he also has the quiet leadership skills that you want even in a young quarterback, and reminds me in a sense of not necessarily performance on the field, but he reminds me a lot of Russell Wilson in terms of how he manages his teammates.
Yeah, and I like that fit, and you know, I hope they get a good coach in there for him. Not that Bowles is a bad coach. I just hope they get a good offensive coach in there for him to get the most out of him.
Number 13. This is our pick. The Cardinals are up. So, in my scenario, the so-called five defensive players that they're really, really targeting. Three of them are off the ball, both the safeties, all the defensive backs are off the board. So they've got Hassan Reddick and you've got Reuben Foster both on the board, who reportedly are at the top. Like their number one priority is to stack the defense, according to what we're hearing in from local radio. And since he's on the board and with the Reuben Foster stuff between the injury, the questionable ability, at least early in his career, to play the mic position, and then also the diluted sample, so just enough uncertainty that pushes Hassan Reddick over the top over Foster, even though they prefer Foster as a player. So Hassan Reddick out of Temple, the linebacker out of Temple, he had very versatile, played as a down, as a hand of the dirt defensive lineman, pass rusher as in Temple, was a safety in college, but shows all sorts of potential. He checks off a lot of boxes in terms of the type of player the Cardinals like, and in terms of dynamic play from as a potential inside linebacker. He's still raw. He hasn't really played the positions other than the Senior Bowl, and it allows him to learn a year under Carlos Dansby. He's, for me, a perfect Cardinals pick, and he's what my gut feeling for the last month has been it's going to be Reddick in round one, and my gut feeling was going to be Davis Webb in round two. We'll see how that plays out. But at least for round one, the board falls that way for me.
And I have this as one of the scenarios that we talked about on the Draft Breakdown podcast last night, and something that I could see the Cardinals being excited to have with the way the board fell. Malik Hooker is available. Reuben Foster is available. But I think with, like Jess talked about, all of the things surrounding Hooker surrounding Foster right now, that you're going to see them kind of push their way down to avoid Foster. And I think with that, they're going to trade down. Leonard Fournette's available at 13. It's a position that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers want to invest in for some reason high. And I think they're going to trade up to 19. That gives the Cardinals an extra third round pick. I think it's like 84 or 85. So that's just more ammunition for the Arizona Cardinals there. And they're able to get that extra third round pick that they covet.
All right, number 14, the Philadelphia Eagles. And this is a pick I know Eagles fans, and I know they really like him. He's already off your board. They get Christian McCaffrey and will be thrilled to get him because he checks off a lot of boxes. Teron Davenport, who runs the Eagles wire for us over in the NFL wire in USA Today, he's been saying that if he's there, he's the Eagles pick.
And I agree with that if he's there, but I think he's going to be gone early. For me, I have the Eagles taking Malik Hooker, who kind of fell, but not really. Safety's an odd position in the NFL, and we've talked about it before. The Cardinals have found so much success at safety with rentals and undrafted free agent. And it would be interesting to me to see them invest highly. So with that in mind, that's why I think they would pass on Hooker. But now you have a team in the Eagles who need help on the back end of the defense. They have Malcolm Jenkins, but they're going to be kind of looking to bridge that gap. And Hooker is a very versatile safety, and I think he'll give them a lot of good looks out of there. So I'm going to have them taking Malik Hooker.
Number 15 of the Indianapolis Colts. And here's an interesting name who's still available. That would be Reuben Foster. Todd McShay, and I think wasn't it Todd McShay that said, if there's a fall for Foster.
Yeah, this is his floor.
That's probably where it is. But even still, this is where I say, even with the concerns, they're going to pass up on him because guess what? What they have not done for Andrew Luck is protect him. And so at number 15, I have them taking Forrest Lamp, a guy that we both really like in terms of potential, but they've got to get Andrew Luck some help, and I think they wise up in this case.
Yeah, and I just have them taking Reuben Foster. I think I like the Forrest Lamp pick there, but I think they're going to take Reuben Foster because they're in a position where they have to gamble on defense at this point. And Foster's tape is, really good. It's all the other concerns that they have. But I think I think they have to take a chance on him.
Number 16, Baltimore Ravens. Who's your pick?
Baltimore Ravens is kind of where the fall of Corey Davis stops for me. And they take Corey Davis. They invested in Breshad Perriman not too long ago, but he hasn't, really worked out the way they had hoped. Davis is a high-end two, low-end one type guy. I think he's as the only wide receiver that the Cardinals would consider in the first round because he can work out of the slot, take over for Fitz. In 2018 and beyond, that all being said, I still don't see that happening. And I think the fall of Corey Davis stops at 16 with the Baltimore Ravens.
And for me, this is where Reuben Foster's fall ends. And we know the Ravens had themselves a a linebacker for a whole long time who had his own set of questionable character issues in Ray Lewis. Reuben Foster kind of has, you know, it would make for the same type of thing. And they're a defensive-minded team. They've stacked their defense. They were great last year. They added to it this year and in free agency. And adding Reuben Foster to the mix, I think, would be a, you know, would just continue to strengthen that side of the ball.
And that makes sense to me. I think that would be a nice fit.
Number 17, we go to the Washington Redskins. That's, you know, we're kind of right on the same track. This is where I see Corey Davis getting picked up. I'll tell you this, though. My original pick for the Redskins was going to be a surprise. And I had them going Patrick Mahomes originally. And I'm like, I can't do that. I think one or two mock drafts ago, I did the same thing, the Washington Redskins pulling off the wackadoo. But if you look at, well, they've got Kirk Cousins. He's not locked in long-term, and it sounds like he doesn't want to stay. Why not pull the trigger on the guy that potentially has the biggest, highest ceiling, and you can let him sit for a year? Not necessarily would Deshaun Cousins be would Kirk Cousins be particularly helpful for him as a competitor, but it would send the signal, okay, we're moving on, and you can go to San Francisco and play for Kyle Shanahan if you want. But I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. And so I went with the offensive weapon in Corey Davis.
And I can see exactly what you're talking about there. That would make a lot of sense. I think that's something that we could see. And overall, you know, you kind of look at it and guess in terms of where a guy fits mostly. They lost Pierre Garçon, and you know, I think Corey Davis kind of fits into what Pierre Garçon does. You know, they're similar to, you know, he's a lesser, but he's similar to Larry Fitzgerald in the way he's used. So I think that's a nice one, and I do like that overall. You know, I know that they really would like a pass rusher in Washington, and I think I'm going to oblige them and give them Derek Barnett as he kind of pseudo falls down to that area.
Number 18 works out for the Titans at number 18. It actually works out just the way you said that you know, they might not want to go, but I do have them taking cornerback Kevin King. So they managed to early get Jonathan Allen to help up front, and they still get their cornerback in Kevin King there at number 18.
Yeah, and I think that's what's going to end up happening if they don't, you know, get that guy early, like you said. And I have them taking the guy that I wouldn't be shocked if they took at 5, and that's John Ross out of Washington. Like I said, they desperately need to get Marcus Mariota help vertically, whether that's a big body, you know, 50-50 ball guy a la Mike Williams, or if that's John Ross, who is literally the fastest person in the NFL. So
Number 19, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This is a name that had they been connected to for a long time. They need a running back, and with Fournette off the board, McCaffrey off the board, even though there are concerns with the off-the-field stuff, they go with Dalvin Cook.
Yeah, and I've heard that, and, you know, I think the one thing you worry about there is how close, and I'm not going to lie, like I don't know the exact equidistance from Tallahassee to Tampa Bay, but that's still in the same state. So it's not a far enough away move for me to like that fit in terms of place, but it does make sense. And like I said, I had them moving up to take Leonard Fournette because they do want a running back. And I think if Joe Mixon and Dalvin Cook were clean off the field, they'd be in a 100% different position, but the fact that neither of them are, you end up having to figure out exactly what you're going to do in order to address that position and how you want to attack it. So this is where I have the Cardinals picking, and it comes down to two questions. The questions are, do you want the Cardinals to make a pick here, or do you want the Cardinals to pick a quarterback? And I know that's still them making a pick, but everybody is going to be torn on this because, you know, they're not going to want to waste a pick on a quarterback because it's, you know, they're not going to play this year and insert all of these other things here. I went back and forth on this. Mahomes is on the board. I think that he's going to be the guy at 13 on Thursday, but I'm going to hedge myself because that's what we do in the NFL draft season is you hedge. And so for me, with the trade down, and this is something I talked with Jess about before, this type of scenario coming out, I think with the trade down, they're going to get a player that they can play on day one, quote unquote, and they're going to draft a guy that you talked about a little earlier, Forrest Lamp out of Western Kentucky, to address whatever offensive line need they may have because he's literally that versatile. I'm all in 110% on drafting only left tackles from now on, by the way, to fill out your offensive line. So that Lamp fits the bill. If they need a right guard this year, he works. You know, if they need a left guard or a right tackle next year, he works. I'm going to give them Forrest Lamp at 19.
And that's a great addition. In one of my best case scenarios, they trade down like you did here. I wrote about this a couple of days ago. The best case scenario would be they trade down, take a quarterback, and somehow have Lamp fall into the middle of the second round. That seems really, really unlikely with what we're hearing now. I mean, I have Lamp gone at 15, and you have him going at number 19. So, well, yeah. That sounds good. Well, we'll wrap out this section with this segment of the show with the 20th pick going with the Denver Broncos, who badly need a left tackle. And I have them, rather than going with Bowles, who you have coming off the board super early, they go with the Wisconsin big guy in Ryan Ramczyk.
And I'm with you on that pick. I don't like it necessarily, but I think that's who they pick there at 20. I think they get a guy in Ramczyk who dominated his one season at the Division I level. And so it's hard to nitpick what he did on the field, but he was a Division III prospect before that moved up to Division I, and he's already had surgery on his hip. Those are two big red flags if I'm a team, but I'm not. So, you know, it makes sense completely. And I have them go in the same direction.
Okay. Come back on the final segment. We'll wrap up the first round. So that's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. Rise Up C-Red. So we've got the first 20 picks in the books. Numbers 11 through 20 for me were Marshawn Lattimore to the Saints at number 11. Deshaun Watson to the Jets, who traded down. Hassan Reddick to the Arizona Cardinals at linebacker, Christian McCaffrey to the Eagles, Forrest Lamp to the Colts, Reuben Foster to the Baltimore Ravens, Corey Davis to the Washington Redskins, cornerback Kevin King to the Tennessee Titans, running back Dalvin Cook to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and Ryan Ramczyk to the Denver Broncos at number 20. Give us a quick rundown of 11 through 20 for you.
And the Saints took Hassan Reddick. Deshaun Watson went to the Cleveland Browns. The Buccaneers traded up, gave up their third-round selection for Leonard Fournette, obviously their first round as well. The Eagles take the falling Malik Hooker. The Colts take the falling Reuben Foster. The Ravens get the falling Corey Davis. The Redskins get Derek Barnett. Tennessee Titans get their receiver and John Ross. The Cardinals with their 19th, or with, sorry, with the 18th pick. No, 19th, I was right. The 19th pick, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 19th pick, take Forrest Lamp out of Western Kentucky. And then Ryan Ramczyk, I agreed with Jess, goes to the Denver Broncos, which takes us to my second oldest son's favorite team, the Detroit Lions. And Lions people are in love with Taco Charlton. And our buddy Jeff Risden was on the show last night, and I asked him, why do Lions fans like Taco Charlton so much? And he said, and I quote, well, they're mostly idiot Michigan fans. So with that in mind, I'm going with TJ Watt out of Wisconsin at 21.
And I'm going with the defensive tackle, Malik McDowell, kind of in the same. You look a couple years ago when they had the dominant defensive line between Ndamukong Suh and, oh, can't remember the name of the other guy. Oh, geez.
I know who you're talking about. Now. Yeah, he's good. He's a big dude. He played for Auburn. Everybody knows who we're talking about. We'll be fine.
Stupid. Anyway, so yeah, Malik McDowell's the pick for me at number 21. Well, at number 22, the Dolphins get the guy that all the Lions fans love in Taco Charlton.
I don't see what anybody likes in Taco. And Nick Fairley was the guy we're trying to remember.
That's right. Nick Fairley, dumb. I should have known that.
No, I mean, that's a tough one. I'm not going to lie. And I have them taking I have them going with Charles Harris, the Marcus Golden clone out of Missouri. And no, it's not just because he went to Mizzou. These guys are like, I've done a complete 180 on the Mizzou defensive ends and edge rushers because they're dogs, and not in a bad way. Like, they are legitimate, like, nonstop. You can't get them to stop. And I just love that mentality. Talent, they may not be the greatest, but they're going to wear you out and wear you down.
Number 23, New York Giants. I get them. Garrett Bowles, the guy who went top 10 for you.
Well, that's because the Chargers are dumb, not me. I don't have anything to do with that. You know, and the Giants, I'm going to have them taking David Njoku out of Miami. They really want a weapon. I could even see Evan Engram here, depending on how they want to, you know, diversify that offense. But I have them taking Miami tight end David Njoku.
At number 24 for the Oakland Raiders, they probably should go somewhere on defense. But let me tell you how fun this would be to add to that offense. And I have David Njoku going to the Raiders. Imagine that offense. You already have Amari Cooper and you add David Njoku to that mix. Well, how fun would that be for Derek Carr?
That would be a great. And, you know, I still am upset that Derek Carr is a member of the Oakland Raiders and not the Arizona Cardinals. Every day it gets worse. Every day. I do have them going defense, though, and I have them taking Malik McDowell. So I love the juice in McDowell. I think when it's all said and done, he could end up being the best defensive player in this draft, which is scary.
And number 25, Patrick Mahomes to the Houston Texans. It's been talked about for a long time, and it actually works out that way. Patrick Mahomes, quarterback to the Houston Texans. Whether he starts this year, I don't think it's going to take very much to be better than Tom Savage, but Savage does have a couple of years in the league, so we'll go with that.
Write it in stone if he's there. I'm with you, though. And I cry and I'll weep as the Cardinals pass on their Derek Carr once again.
Number 26, the Seattle Seahawks. They're going to finally bite for the second year in a row. They're going offensive line. I have them taking Cam Robinson.
I thought about it, but spoiler alert, this is the team that I was told promised Marcus May they were going to take him. So Marcus May, safety.
You told me that, so that's why I didn't do it. It's like you were going to.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, I was going to mock Robinson too, like if we're being completely honest, but I mean, it does make sense. They're long in the tooth back there. They don't know what they're getting out of Earl Thomas. So they get a guy that is not nearly as good as Earl Thomas. I'm not, you know, don't, if a Seattle fans finds this, I'm not saying he's as good as Earl Thomas, but they're getting a guy that can replace him. And they're assuring that they have that guy that they want, that they identified could do similar type things as Earl Thomas.
And they're taking a potential target for the Cardinals away from their second round pick because Marcus May, the latest reports that the Cardinals have, their interest is increasing in him. As one of the safeties they want to target. Number 27, the Kansas City Chiefs. One of your favorite linebackers in the draft, Zach Cunningham.
Yeah, and I like that fit, but I'm going to go a different route, same position, and take Jared Davis out of
Florida.
He meets their athletic measurables slightly better, and I think he can give them what Derek Johnson, excuse me. I'm watching David Johnson highlights on the screen. what Derek Johnson gave them for so long.
Number 28, Dallas Cowboys. Jabril Peppers. I think he gives them some help in the back end. I wasn't sure which way to go. I said, I thought about going with Melifonwu, but ultimately I think the versatility, the allure of a Jabril Peppers plus the help in the return game, I think that's a really nice fit for the Cowboys.
And I think that the Cowboys are going to take a pass rusher. TJ Watt's the guy they want. He's gone. Charles Harris is another guy they would like. He's gone. So I think they're going to take Tack McKinley out of UCLA, a guy that, you know, again, plays with his hair on fire. He's kind of a wild man out there, and I think he's going to be a guy that really helps them on their defense.
At number 29, that's where I have them actually, the Packers, that's where they're going to go, is the pick you just gave them. That's Tack McKinley. I thought about TJ Watt here. There's a lot of allure. There's some mock drafts that have him going there. After all, have the Wisconsin kids stay in Wisconsin. But ultimately, we want the more productive, the guy that has, you know, again, like you said, hair on fire, Tack McKinley out of UCLA. Although I do like the pick for you, since that would be really like the first Cowboys pick pass rusher who doesn't already come with a whole bunch of baggage that's going to get suspended. So,
right. and I have them taking Kevin King. Their secondary is atrocious, just atrocious. So I think they'll take King. They're big on Forrest Lamp, I've heard. I don't know if his arm length is a trouble for them, but I think they'll take King, who gets all the measurables that they want.
At number 30, the Pittsburgh Steelers. They will love to get this pick as they land the safety Melifonwu.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense. And when you look at it and you kind of dissect everything, it makes sense. But I have this, and this is my, you know, this is my piecing everything together, kind of just trying to figure out what the Cardinals are going to do. I think the Steelers trade out of the first round with the Cardinals at 45. And so the Cardinals give up 45 and pick 77. They still have a third round pick. And they trade back up into the first round to get DeShone Kizer at pick 30 to ensure that they get the quarterback they want, and also to make sure that they get 5 years on that quarterback.
And that very well could be the pick. Heck, it could be the pick for the Steelers. I've seen a lot of mock drafts, and it would make sense much in the same fashion as it makes sense for the Cardinals. Kizer fits what Todd Haley wants to do offensively, and they've got, you know, Ben Roethlisberger there already in place. You've got a strong Steelers culture or an organization which would suit Kizer really well. And I think the same situation as Arizona. They kind of, interestingly enough, with the Cardinals, which are always called Steelers West, I think they've built the same type of organizational culture in the same way. And with Carson Palmer already in place, Bruce Arians as coach, either one of those teams, I think, would be a really good spot for Kizer.
Yeah, and I just think I think the Cardinals, you know, they've talked ad nauseum about these picks in 2018. So maybe they're willing to split with some of those picks to even entice it more. Say, you know, okay, we'll give you 77 this year and, you know, two-thirds in 2018. Because let's be honest, draft capital in the next year doesn't really – have any value because we don't know who's going to be available. Whereas this year, you at least have names put on a board on a roster already. So, you know, could the Cardinals give up two, you know, 45 and then two third rounders in 2018. That, you know, that's something that you could look at as well, because they will have comp picks. They could potentially have multiple fourth rounders to, you know, utilize to move up into the third round next year if that's what they want to do. All of that being said, I think this is, you know, this is that type of move that you make where you find the guy you want, you identify him. They've only met 32 times with DeShone Kizer during the process to figure out if he's the guy, and which is important. Like, I'm not making light of it. Like, they legitimately have to figure out if he can be the guy to take over the reins from Carson Palmer. I don't know whether or not they really think he is, but with him falling towards the end of the first round and the Cardinals having that surplus of 2018 picks, that means they're either keen on giving up enough this year because they have enough next year, or they're willing to give up those picks in next year's draft.
31, the Atlanta Falcons need help in the secondary. I give them a player who's even gone as high as the Cardinals in the first round in LSU's Tre'Davious White.
And I have them taking Jordan Willis out of Kansas State. They need help. You know, it's funny to talk about the team that lost a 28-3 lead in the Super Bowl about how bad they need help on the defense. But it does make sense when you really think about it. So
yes,
Jordan and then Willis getting a defender that can, you know, help out.
And then for the final pick of the first round, number 32, not the New England Patriots who got themselves Brandon Cooks instead, the New Orleans Saints. In the final pick of the first round, they take John Ross, the speedy, fast receiver out of Washington. And that makes a very nice haul for. In fact, you probably say that the Saints might win that first round with being able to pick up Marshawn Lattimore at number 11 and then have John Ross at the end of the first round, where you give, you know, you replace Brandon Cooks with the John Ross, and then you add, instead of, you know, trading for Malcolm Butler, you get Marshawn Lattimore. And so, not bad.
And I have them taking a guy you've already had off the board. Them taking Obi Melifonwu. I think it just makes sense at that point. They really address the defense in this draft, and they get a guy in Melifonwu who can play on the backside and do different things for them.
And that will wrap up the first round. That'll wrap up our mock draft. So by the time you're listening to this, it might be draft day, might be the night before the draft. So compare. We'll talk next week. As to how things turned out, how did the Cardinals do? How did our mock drafts do? I'm sure they'll probably be fairly atrocious as most mock drafts end up being. But yeah, that'll wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We talked mock draft. We talked Darryl Washington. If you like the show, make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes if you use iTunes. And if you really like us, if you love us, which I hope you do, go ahead and go on there and give us a 5-star rating. You can find us at a number of places. You've got iTunes, you've got Google Play, Stitcher Radio. We're found on blogtalkradio.com as well as on each of our individual sites, cardswire.com and revengeofthebirds.com. And you can find us on social media on Twitter, Rise Up Sea Red, and also on Facebook, Rise Up Sea Red. On behalf of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. It's draft week. We will be back to analyze the draft next week.